Minnesota's talk radio leader, 760 KFMB presents It's Your Money and Your Life. For the next hour, Richard Muzio and Joe Vecchio will educate and inform you on matters related to your financial future, your life, and your leisure. Now, with It's Your Money and Your Life, here are Richard and Joe.
All right, good evening, everybody. My name is Joe Vecchio, your co-host, announcer, and producer, coming to you live from KFMB with 50,000 watts of power. We're heard not just in San Diego County, but Orange County, L.A. County, up the coast of Seattle on a good night, down to Cabo, out to the desert. You can hear us on the 760 KFMB app or 760KFMB.com. And now it's time to introduce the main man of the hour. He's a best-selling author. He is a marathon runner. He is a family office advisor to several high-net-worth families. He's a philanthropist. He's an all-around good guy and family man. And his name is Richard Muzio. Richard, how are you tonight?
I'm marvelous, Joe. I'm all tennised out.
You've been lounging around, and I've been doing all the research. So.
Exactly. I was down in Indian Wells. I want to thank our sponsor, UBS, because they let us use the UBS suite down at Indian Wells yesterday.
Yeah, you've been slumming
Got some amazing matches in. And then, of course, you know, it was a different dinner menu than it was lunch menu even. So you talk about being spoiled. So thanks to Ty Lim, Patrick Schertenberger, Mike Kaniger, who, of course, works with Mike Karanta and Drew Friedeth. Also wanted to give a big shout-out and congratulations to Mike Kaniger, partner of Drew Friedeth and Mike Karanta, because he ran his first ever marathon last Sunday. He ran the L.A. Marathon and finished in just over 5 hours. In that brutal heat. So congratulations, Mike.
Wow.
Kudos to you. That's quite an accomplishment, because it was about 15 degrees hotter than anybody in their right mind would have wanted it to be to run a marathon last Sunday.
Well, I haven't been getting into running yet, Rich. I promised to do that, but I did go gluten-free and sugar-free, and I noticed a big difference in just like 7-10 days.
That's good, Joe. I'm actually gluten-free intolerant.
Yeah, really?
That's a joke.
A gluten-free intolerant. Well, you've never touched a cigarette
I've never even tasted coffee in my lifetime. So I'm not too bad.
But anyway, do you eat bread and pasta and all that though?
I'm Italian.
Yeah, I know.
That's a rhetorical question.
I am too, but I tell you, I feel so much better that
Joe. I can't speak unless I have a piece of bread in my left hand.
And of course, if they tie our hands together, we can't talk either.
Exactly. So.
But anyway, we've got to, well, let
we,
me.
We got to get going, Joe, because it's we got a lot of people in studio.
We do. But I just want to plug the USO is going to have their 73rd anniversary Stars and Stripes Ball. I promise Marina Horwitz I do this. It's May 3rd. If you want to support the military heroes, look them up online there. But the Stars and Stripes Ball for the USO. But anyway, tonight in studio, we actually have three guests, but we're going to do one guest for this first segment here. And he's quite a distinguished gentleman. He's an MD. PhD, and he's a filmmaker and is a man of many talents. Graduate of Harvard, MIT, and Harvard Med School. We'll get into all that in a second, though. But his name is, and he's director of a movie called Divorce Corp, and that'll be the bulk of the conversation tonight. But his name is Joe Sorge. And Joe, good evening. How are you tonight?
I'm doing great.
That's
how are you, gentlemen?
Wonderful.
Doing
wonderful.
Great. Thanks.
So, look, I've seen this movie two times. It actually was in the theaters in San Diego here. Well, tell us a little bit about your background, Joe, your educational background, and how you got into filmmaking, and then why you got into this film.
Well, I started out in medicine. I never really practiced medicine, but I went to medical school, and then I started a biotechnology company. And then after 25 years of doing that, I wanted a change of life, and so I sold the company. And
Well, not just any medical school. I mean, let's say where you went to school, because you MIT and Harvard, right?
Yeah, a lot of time in Boston.
Okay, there you go.
It was hard work, challenging schools.
You might be humble, but I'm not, so I'll brag for you. But anyway. 3 degrees, this gentleman. But anyway, then you got into the biotech sphere here and ran a company for many, many years in San Diego, right?
Yeah, in 1984, we started a biotechnology company. My brother, my father, and myself, it was called Stratagene, and we sold it in 2007.
Okay.
And since then, I've been pursuing some other interests. We have a TV show called The Six Little McGees and created this documentary called Divorce Corp.
Right. Now, what was the motivation and genesis for the idea to do this film? Did him have a bad experience, apparently?
Well, unfortunately, I went through the family court system here in San Diego, and I don't want to particularly talk about my case or any of the specifics of that, but I saw so many people that were, I thought, treated poorly by the court system. You know, when you go to public court, you sit in the courtroom and you wait for your case to be called, and there may be 10, 15 other cases that go before you. And I just saw people being abused. I saw relationships between the lawyers and the judge that I thought were somewhat questionable. Some of the body language, some of occasionally the judge would ask the lawyer for advice. It almost seemed like the lawyers knew more than the judge. And so, you know, it just made me think that there might be substance for a documentary there. And so we began to do some research. And once we investigated other stories around the country, we were shocked at some of the stories that we learned about.
Yeah. The film Divorce Corp, it was in theaters here in about 40, how many around the country you said?
About 35 theaters 35, around the country.
Right, which is great for a documentary if people know how. And you spent, I mean, this is a pretty high budget film. Most of them are $500,000, where the budget for this was a couple million, right?
Yes, that's correct.
So, I mean, that was, to give you an idea, the Al Gore's Inconvenient Truth was 1.8. So spent more than that, and he got an Oscar, so. Maybe we'll put yours up for an Oscar, too. Who knows? But I've seen the film two times. You start out at the beginning saying it's a $50 billion a year industry. It's real easy to get married, and it can be very difficult and long time to get a divorce, right?
That's correct. Yeah. And I don't believe that that is a government policy. If the government wanted to make it difficult to get divorced, they could impose a tax and have that money go to the public treasury. But instead, the money goes to private wealthy individuals, the lawyers and the judges and the custody evaluators and the accountants that are involved in this business.
Yeah, so, I was amazed to see how the judges, you know, they'll force one of the parties to sell their house so they could pay off the lawyers, right? I mean, isn't that what's going on?
It's incredible. The family court judges are all powerful. And it's because the judiciary has unilaterally called the family courts courts of equity. And because they label them courts of equity, they're able to squirm out from under some of the constitutional protections that we would have in another kind of court, either a civil court of law or a criminal court. And so you're not entitled to a jury. You're not entitled to a lawyer if you can't afford one. You're not entitled to a speedy trial.
Well, what happens if you can't afford a lawyer? You have to represent yourself?
You fend for yourself.
Oh, my God.
But Joe, my question as a professional is I've never really begrudged professionals getting paid if they're offering value. But having represented a couple of clients as, shall we say, support in divorce, I'm not a divorce attorney. I'm actually a CPA who does forensic accounting. What's amazing to me about the court system is the time involved, which is also, I guess, a function of money. It gets much more expensive as time just drags and drags and drags. Can you comment on how slow the process is?
Well, a typical divorce takes 2 years. And, you know, in Scandinavia, you fill out a form and you submit it to the government and then you're divorced. Lawyers, no courts.
But when you say typical, you just mean of an average person.
Yeah.
Yeah. Typical divorce, 2 years. Some of them can go 10 years. We had one person, 22 years, and they were still battling.
Oh, Jesus.
But yeah, I don't hang around with average people. So the people I've represented who've been divorced, they tend to have net worths, you know, in eight figures and above. And I mean, they're pretty. In fact, you might have heard of some of them if I mentioned them.
But even those.
Those tend to even take longer than 2 years, is my point.
But those prenups, sometimes those don't even hold water. If they're judges can still pierce those, right?
Yeah, they can pierce them.
Yeah.
And there are a number of factors that will determine whether a judge can pierce a prenup or not. But it's, you know, Richard, it's very interesting that you say that these wealthy people, the divorces last longer. And I don't think that's a coincidence. I think when there's a lot of money there, the cases get dragged on. And in fact, if you are broke, if you have no money at all, well, let's say you have the $500 it costs to pay the court fee, you'll sail right through the system. It's almost like you're a homeless person that gets ignored, you know? But if you have money, then somehow they figure out how you need this expert and that expert, and your children need lawyers to represent them, and it turns into...
That came out in the documentary. That's the first thing the lawyers do is check on all the assets, and you have a form you go through, right? And they want to know your retirement funds, every darn thing. And if they smell there's money there, then right away they get the parties battling, it seems, right?
In part, it's that there's money to pay for the battle, and in part, sometimes one of the parties wants to fight over the money.
Mm-hmm.
Whenever there's money involved, you get strange behavior from people, and family court's no different. They say that criminal court is bad people on their best behavior, and family court is good people on their worst behavior.
But do you think fees should be capped, though? Because I know when people are billing by the hour, they can sort of perpetuate billing by large document requests and so
actually, on. I do not. I believe in free enterprise, and I believe that if a professional can charge a large hourly rate and they earn it, that's fine. That doesn't bother me. What I think we should do is take the money out of the divorce process. I don't think it should be an adversarial fight. you know, a divorce court is like the Roman Colosseum with Caesar there, thumbs up or thumbs down, and people fight to the death. Mm-hmm. Not literally to the death, but sometimes they do.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think the dissolution of a marriage should be anything like that. I think it should be mediated in a quiet conference room. I think people should be encouraged to cooperate, to compromise. And again, we, you know, part of the film, we studied how they do it in Scandinavia, and they do not go to court. They do not use the adversarial process. They simply sit down with their accountant, and the accountant says, okay, here are your joint assets. This is how it should be divided. And that's how it goes. Now, the Scandinavians have an advantage. They don't have alimony, and they don't have very high child support. Child support is a fixed amount for every child, and it's sufficient to take care of the needs of the child, but it's not supplemental pseudo-alimony like we have in the United States.
Yeah.
And so it makes it a lot easier to go your separate ways.
Yeah. Well, we'll get more into this. Get over to divorcecorp.com, folks. We're going to take a little break right now. Come right back with more of It's Your Money and Your Life, the award-winning show, right after this.
Now, It's Your Money and Your Life on AM 760 KFMB.
All right, we're back with our guest, Director Joe Sorge, Director of Divorce Corp. You should get on that website.com and get the film and get the book and everything else. He's an expert on this. Joe, there was an outrageous case in Indiana in your film about a gentleman. You want to tell us about what happened to him?
Sure. Well, this gentleman, his wife filed for divorce, and for 2 years, they each took care of their two little girls half and half. So they would spend half the time with the father, half the time with the mother. And then the judge ordered a custody evaluation be done on both parents. And the custody evaluator recommended a 30-70 sharing of the children rather than 50-50. And this gentleman challenged that, and he could not make any headway in the court. So he started a blog that criticized the custody evaluator. And the judge essentially told him, he said, look, I cannot stop you from blogging about the custody evaluator, but I can tell you this, it's probably going to affect the final outcome of your custody situation. Well, the gentleman felt that he had, you know, First Amendment rights, the right of free speech, and so he didn't shut down his blog. And when the judge made a final custody determination, he gave 100% custody to the wife and 0% to this gentleman. And so the gentleman started blogging about the judge because he couldn't see his daughters.
On his Facebook, right? Just for his own friends, right? I think
that's another case. But that's okay. We can get into that one too. But this individual started saying that this judge was being terribly unfair to the children. In fact, said that he thought that the judge was guilty of child abuse for taking the children away from their father. Well, they then charged him with harassment of a judge, a criminal charge, convicted him and sent him off to prison for 5 years. Not because he didn't swear on his website. There were no threats. It was simply because he was criticizing the judge's actions. There was another case, as you alluded to, another gentleman on his Facebook site was not allowed to see his children because his wife had accused him of domestic violence. He was acquitted in criminal court, so he was found not guilty, yet the family court judge still would not let him see his children, but under supervised visitation situations. So he posted on his Facebook site that, you know, the laws are essentially unfair. All you have to do is claim that you are afraid of someone,
right,
and they take your children away. The judge told him he was going to go to jail for 60 days unless he posted an apology to his wife on his Facebook site for 30 days. You know, it's just unreal
one of the points in the film was, you know, there are a few consequences for false accusations. And you had that one investigator, he's counseling parties how to get the house if they just make negative stuff up.
Yeah. Well, this is a very sensitive area because, you know, there are true accusations. And when true accusations are ignored by the judge, sometimes there are tragic consequences. You know, mm-hmm. if someone really is threatening a life or violence, mm-hmm. That's something that has to be dealt with. But on the other hand, we talked to many, many attorneys and experts who said that it's also false accusations of domestic violence are used as a strategy to win the children and win the home. Mm-hmm. And if you get custody of the children and you get possession of the home, you end up financially much better off. And I think that's one of the terrible things about our system is that somehow the children are put into the middle of this financial tug of war. And the more time that you get with the children, the more child support you receive or the less child support you have to pay. And so they essentially put a price tag on the children's heads and use them to incite a battle between the parents.
So, Joe, question, speaking of children, a lot of seems to be more and more popular for judges to recommend that children get their own legal representation. What do you think about that?
I think in most cases that's a scam. In some cases it may be necessary, but unfortunately what you see in our film is that the judges will appoint one of their friends, an attorney, to represent the children. In some cases, the attorneys will bill $100,000 to represent a two-year-old child that he's not even talking to. He takes the kid to the movies or to buy some ice cream.
Right,
bills 100 grand for that. And then that attorney can give campaign contributions to that judge. So there's a cycle there. I mean, it's a clear conflict of interest, but our laws do not prohibit that sort of behavior. And so you get this cycle where the judges hire experts or attorneys. The parents have to pay for those attorneys. And then those experts and attorneys give campaign contributions to the judges, hold fundraisers for them, hire them after retirement in their law firms. There's just an incestuous type of relationship.
What would be some good recommendations? Maybe require the couples to go to mediation first and try that before they go to court, and then maybe take courts of equity and put them under the superior court rubric. Would that help?
I'm a strong proponent of mediation. I think people should resolve things under peaceful settings. They should try to compromise. Court is a terrible place. Sometimes you think you're going to go in there and win something, and you end up losing all your money. You lose your children. You can go bankrupt. You lose your home. So it's very scary. But unfortunately, under our current system, there's a prize for the person who wins some of the time. And that tempts people, especially when there's some money in the partnership, where it tempts one of those parties to go in and litigate. And oftentimes the lawyers will encourage that. And so you find that people in the United States do not use mediation as much as they could. As I said earlier, in Scandinavia, couples talk things out. There's no financial incentive to go to court. And so they essentially mediate. It may be with a priest or an elder or someone that they mutually trust. They generally talk things through. Whereas in the United States, they go into this gladiator type battle and nobody wins except the professionals.
Mm-hmm. So Joe, question, love being a nebulous thing, what attributes need to be in place so that people can stay married, in your opinion?
Well, I think, it's very interesting. People say, well, if divorce is so easy in Scandinavia, the divorce rate must be very high. But in fact, the divorce rate's lower.
Right.
It's lower than it is in the United States.
Right.
And I think what they do in Scandinavia is I think they take a little longer before they get married. They get married at an older age. So they've really determined that this is someone they want to spend their life with. And you reach a certain age and it's like, okay, divorce is not in the cards anymore. But I think in terms of maintaining a good relationship, I'm no expert on that. But I'd say good communication, respecting the other person, treating the other person as you would want them to treat you.
And then we mentioned at the break, we're each having some individual hobbies and occupations, hobbies. And what was the third thing?
Friends.
Oh, mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, a lot of times you lose a lot of those when you're going through divorce,
yeah.
Right?
Well, a lot of times you lose them going through marriage, too.
Yeah.
And I think it's healthy for people to maintain their own friends.
Yes. Have to have strong social support, social network. So even for good mental health, whether you're single, married, or whatever. So make sure you do that. But let's see. So these experts in the movie, there's one scene where a judge in Texas was whipping his daughter. She set up a camera in her room. She was a handicapped kid, and mm-hmm. I guess he didn't want her to be on the computer. Actually whipping her with a belt, and that guy's off the bench now, thank God. But I hope the girl didn't get any more abuse. So
he's off the bench not because the ethics committee pulled him off the bench. They let him keep his job for 2.5 years after that video came out. He's off the bench now because the public finally elected someone else to fill that position. Mm. But, we didn't show that to disparage that judge. We showed that to demonstrate how one human being could be so different philosophically from yourself or your spouse or your children, and that one human being can make these major life-changing decisions about your money, your finances, your home, where your children go to school, who gets to see the children, whether you get to see your children or not. We just think it's just wrong for these courts of equity to have, judge, jury, and executioner all as one single human being.
Mm-hmm. So, Joe, one or two things that could really improve things in terms of changes to the system, in your opinion?
Well, I think that if we take the money, I believe in the Scandinavian model. Mm-hmm. I think we should take the money prize out of divorce. I think, assets should be divided up. Marital assets should be divided 50-50. separate property gets retained by the individual, just like we have community property in the United States. But I think if there's going to be any alimony or substantial child support above and beyond the needs of the child, those should be determined by private written agreement between the parties, either a prenuptial agreement or an antenuptial agreement, where the parties say, okay, someone is going to be the homemaker, someone's going to be the breadwinner. We're changing the model here. The homemaker's giving up a career, so there will be alimony after divorce. But I don't think it's the template anymore. You know, 80% of U.S. families have two wage earners. Mm-hmm. And so to force an alimony trial on people in every single case is just inappropriate in the United States these days. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, take the money out of the splitting up, have it contractually agreed to ahead of time, and we won't get these acrimonious battles that we have.
Yeah. Anyway, we're coming up on our break here, Joe, but 3 years of your life to make this film. How long to write the book? You wrote the book?
Well, I had a very talented co-writer on the book, so that helped, but that was about 6 months.
It
was during the editing process of the film.
But folks, get over to divorcecorp.com and learn more. Get the book, get the movie. It's really fascinating stuff. And Joe, thanks for being with us. We're going to take a break right now. Come right back with afternoon sports and weather right after this.
You're welcome. Thank you.
All right, we're back with the second half of It's Your Money and Your Life. And over to Richard to thank our sponsors.
Thanks to our sponsors. Again, UBS, Mike Karanta, Drew Freitas. Again, thanks for the invite down to the tennis tournament. In case anybody's wondering, Roger Federer and Novak Djokovic won today. So in the finals tomorrow, it's going to be exciting stuff. Right across the street from UBS in La Jolla is San Diego's best business bank. That would be Regions Bank, Steve Sefton, Sean Puckett. Jason Kruger with Signature Analytics, San Diego's finest CFO company. Joel Gruskin with Cost Segregation Initiatives, helping real estate owners improve their cash flow. Carl Sheeler with Berkeley Research Group, helping business owners understand the values of their businesses and how to measure the risks inherent in figuring out those values and improving those values. Our favorite CPAs on the planet, right in the midst of tax season, but they have got things under control. That's Plato Epic CPAs up in Vista. Brenda Geiger and the Geiger Law Offices up in Carlsbad. And last but not least, the Lombardi Group and the LG Experience, helping wealth advisors and CPAs improve the value that they deliver to their very best clients. Joe, how can our listeners find out about our amazing roster of sponsors?
Well, if they get over to iymoney.com, get their cursor over on sponsors, there's a drop-down menu there. All their information is there, their contact information, telephones, email, everything is there. And I know you've had many years of great success working with all of them, correct?
Oh, many years would be the understatement of the century. So, anyway.
And we thank them
for... It's been too many years.
We thank them for supporting us, and I think we've...
Couldn't do it without you guys and gals, and of course we really, really appreciate it.
And I think they're all pleased that we won 3 first-place Press Club Awards, but more about that later.
Yeah, no second place for us.
Exactly.
But, Joe, we got more guests.
We certainly do. On the heels of that first segment, now we've got a wonderful husband-wife team.
Who've been married 19 years.
Who've been married 19 years,
correct. They just renewed their vows after hearing that show.
But we have an environmental engineer, David Dickens, and his wife, architect Heather Johnston. So welcome to the show, Heather.
Hi, Joe.
And yeah, it's great to be here.
Wonderful. And Heather has a distinction. What triggered booking these guests, if you got the San Diego Home Garden magazine, Lifestyles magazine, in January. Right on the cover.
I saw it.
They've had the Home of the Year 3 times, but this is the 35th annual edition, and this time they made the cover. And so congratulations, Heather.
Thanks so much.
Were you surprised to get this award?
Well, I was kind of hoping.
How many homes were entered in something like this?
I think they got something like 60.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. Wow.
All in San Diego, right?
Yeah.
Wow. Well, for folks, if you don't know, this home was built in La Jolla. And from my understanding, it's a prefab home. It's a modular home. It was built in 2 days, right?
But Heather, can you explain what modular means? Because not all of our listeners know about real estate.
Modular. There's a number of definitions of modular homes, but the one that counts for us is it comes in a box, a whole bunch of different boxes. In this case, 11 boxes.
With instructions? I'm just kidding.
Well, in this case, 11 boxes on 9 big rigs pulled up to the lot, and over the course of 2 days, these boxes were craned into place, and boom, me and David were looking at our view from the second floor. It was amazing.
Wow.
And you've got the photography on your website. You can actually see the whole home constructed.
It's so fun.
In a couple of minutes, right?
Yeah.
What do you call it? Time delayed photography, Richard?
Time lapse.
That's it.
Yeah, time lapse.
Duh. Couldn't think of the word. Thank
so,
you.
are there a lot of sustainability features in your home?
Absolutely. Well, that's the only way to build now.
Such as?
Well, we've got dual pane glass. We've got a very super cool roof, and not just because it's hip, but because it's very reflective, and it doesn't retain much heat. It reflects most of the heat back. And we don't have any AC in the house at all. All the windows provide complete ventilation, even during the hardest part of the summer. It's a simple trick. You put a small opening down low on the windward side, and then a bigger opening up high on across from it. You have amazing cross ventilation. It's very simple.
Wow.
Another thing we have in the second floor, a stairway has a light well over it, and that light well opens up, and it's like a chimney effect. So the ventilation is amazing. It's always cool. It's great, and we don't have to run and spend a lot of money on cooling bills.
And it's up above La Jolla Shore, so you're always getting that onshore drift,
that's
right?
Yeah, that's really useful, too.
Yeah. Now, the materials it's made out of, is that a lot of that reused, or what's it made out of, the wood there and everything?
Oh, we didn't reuse any materials, but what we did reuse was when we took the houses down that were on the site already, a couple cottages, we recycled every piece of those existing cottages. They went to places like Mexico, Habitat for Humanity.
Oh, great.
The thing about buildings, when they're made in the 20s, they're made out of old growth wood that you just can't get now. So this kind of old wood is extremely valuable. It's really strong, takes nails really well. So people want that stuff. So what we did reuse were the houses that were there before.
Mm-hmm. And what kind of wood is in this house?
What you're looking at is Western Red Cedar, that really beautiful gold.
Wow.
Yeah.
It is really neat looking. It's on your website, right? HJArchitect.com.
HeatherJohnstonArchitect.com.
There you go. Yeah, it's really cool. Do you give tours or anything?
We're kind of tired of doing that.
Is that like having relatives who stay too long?
Well, it's on the market for anyone interested, right? I mean,
that's right. It's time for a new project.
Okay.
Is that what you do? You typically will build one and move in and then sell and move on?
That's right. And now I want to take this concept and build apartments. I think that's where we can really see some cost savings and most of all time savings, because people say, well, was it cheaper? The answer is it wasn't necessarily cheaper, but it was twice as fast. So
I can imagine.
Yeah.
Well, to build a standard home in the same size home on that lot, doing it the old way, how long would it take?
About 18 months.
Really?
Absolutely. Yeah, think about it.
Almost as long as a divorce.
We're not going there.
Okay, sorry.
Richard, that last segment. That's the shortest length. But anyway.
So think about it. What happens is we started demolition on April 1st on the job site. And at that exact moment, on that exact same day in Utah, they started building in the factory. Mm-hmm. So think of those savings in terms of efficiencies. Mm-hmm. And also what we wanted to do with this house is build in a way that brought systems to the most important decision that any of us will ever make in a lifetime, our own house. Mm-hmm. If you think of how you build a car today, that's all systems built. It's very efficient. I mean, if we built cars the way we built houses today, it'd be like, well, 1 week the tires show up, and then the next week the chassis shows up, and it's started to rust because the guys went surfing.
And then you get a change order on the glass.
Exactly. Yeah. So,
are you seeing more and more of these though in the county? Are there more people trying to do this now? Or
well, they are, but there's what we wanted to do, and I wanted to do for ourselves is check it out on poor David here. Mm-hmm. So I didn't have a client who was very nervous, and we could basically experiment on our own dime. Mm-hmm. And we learned so much in this process that I can understand why it's not quite mainstream yet.
Mm-hmm. Does the fact that you live in a very nice weather area make a difference? I mean, can you apply this to other geographic regions where maybe the winters are harsher or the summers are hotter?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah, especially with the time factor, because then you can build during the summer and you can be moved in before the winter comes.
Mm-hmm. Let's see, what is I going to say here? You want to do multi-unit dwellings. Is that your next idea for this? And then how many units are you thinking?
Well, I'd like to start with 5 or 10.
Mm-hmm.
And once again, it's a learning process, so I want to make small mistakes.
Mm-hmm. Good idea.
Are you seeing much of this sustainability being applied to the commercial or the office market?
Well, actually more so, because they can get the cost savings. Mm-hmm. You've probably all heard about LEED.
Yeah, sure.
And,
I was going to ask you about
that. Personally, it's a tough one for residences because it's very expensive. Talk about consultants. They all charge a lot to get your points. And It's hard to justify those kinds of consultancy costs for a residence. Now, when you move into a commercial product like an office building, then you can lease advertising that your building is green and your tenants are going to be happier, and you can document how certain lighting increases productivity. So I'd say there's more of a payback for things like LEED in the commercial environment, whereas in the residential, it just doesn't make sense for the average homeowner. Mm-hmm. I mean, it needs to be done because it's the right thing to do, but not necessarily because you want to get LEED certification. Now, I'm going against a lot of people saying that it's a very valuable process and the fundamentals are good, but financially, it hasn't made sense to me yet.
All right. Well, we're going to take our break right now. Heather, we'll come right back with Heather Johnston and David Dickens right after this. Hang on.
AM 760. Now, it's your money and your life on AM 760 KFMB.
All right, we're back in the home stretch here. It's your money and your life. We also have in studio the husband of Heather, David Dickens. He's an environmental engineer. Both fascinating folks. You're both from Canada. I saw that, and very highly credentialed. David, what does an environmental engineer do? And maybe you could tell us about some of your more recent projects or future current projects.
Yeah, I'd be happy to do that. My background is focused on the Arctic. It's actually a lot of people joke about the fact that I live in San Diego and sit on in front of the computer and study, look at ice in the Arctic Ocean. But a good part of my early career for the first 20 or 30 years, in fact, I lived all through the Arctic in native villages and drifting around on ice floes and living in tents for months at a time. So I've seen enough winter in my life to last, a few hundred years, I think. But now I work a lot for major oil companies in the world, and I help them plan offshore exploration and development programs. Mm-hmm. And I get involved with, for instance, the big question, what would happen if you had something like the Deepwater Horizon, the Gulf of Mexico oil spill? What would happen if you had to face that in the Arctic, and how would you deal with it? And so I help companies try to plan what the strategy would be and how we could prevent such a thing and what we would do to try to reduce the damage if it,
You still traveling a lot, too? Happened. You still travel a lot?
I do. I go to, Europe and Norway. I've been lucky enough to have projects in different parts of the world and had a recent project in Kazakhstan, of all places. And so I get to see some fascinating areas.
So is the ice cap really melting?
It is. In the summer, the amount of ice is dramatically less than it ever was, not just in the area, but also in its thickness. Altogether, there's maybe 40% less ice in the summer than there was 30 years ago.
Wow.
That's huge.
That is huge.
And it has a massive impact on the world's climate, as we've seen with the polar vortex here this winter in the U.S.
Chicago. Yeah. Hey, I asked Boone Pickens in public once, how much oil do you think is left in the ground in current rates of consumption? When do you think it'll be gone? He said by 2040 or 2050. He says, y'all be on something else, I think. But do you tend to agree? Or they?
I think we're going to be on oil for a good length of time yet.
Okay.
They think 20% or 20-25% of the world's oil left to be discovered is in the Arctic. I think it's going to take longer for us to wean ourselves from oil, although I think we should make every effort to do that.
Yeah, it'd be nice to get something clean and renewable that would make sense. I mean, I'm not looking to put the oil companies out of business. I just hope they would transfer the technology and use their skills and talents to do something smarter, because obviously it is going to run out at some day. I mean, right?
Oh, it absolutely is, and we need to make every effort to try to move into alternate sources.
Yeah,
and the more pressure we can put on the politicians to get them in that direction, the better.
Now, Heather's an architect, you're an engineer. Do you ever collaborate on projects using your skills, or your careers are totally separate?
Pretty much totally separate. We've shared an office together ever since we've been married.
Mm-hmm.
So we spend all day together, and I think that gives us a good chance to do another 20 years together. Our 19th anniversary is coming up.
That might be a good idea. If you're both doing
days.
The same thing, you might tend to get, you should do something, you should do it this way. No, I'm going to do it that way. So it better do your two separate. Maybe that's
well, we share a lot. I mean, obviously when we build a house, as Heather mentioned, Heather bounces a lot of ideas off me, and I become the client.
Mm-hmm.
And so we swap ideas all the time, and the house really is a team effort in terms of coming up with it. Of course, Heather does all the design work and the blueprints.
Mm-hmm.
But no, it's a collaborative effort.
Yeah. It's great. So how many square feet is the home, Heather?
It's 3,100 square feet and then an extra 1,000 for a 3-car garage.
Wow. And then how many bedrooms and baths?
There's 4 bedrooms and 3.5 baths.
Wow. That's
so you mentioned you used a company in Utah. Is that because there's not a lot of competition yet or not a lot of companies who are able to produce this kind of product?
Well, at the time, that was right. And that was about 3 years ago.
Okay.
And Utah is just, you know, in many ways a more business-friendly climate for this kind of product.
Are they doing a lot more prefab in Utah? Is that why they're based? Or do they sell their modular homes all over?
Everywhere.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And there's a lot of companies in Utah. I'd say there's a good 25 or 40 even. Whereas
really?
in California, I could probably name them all in maybe one hand.
Huh. That's amazing. So is there solar panels in solar power or thermal?
It's got pegs in the roof to take solar panels, but it was a budgetary decision to not put them in.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, you get enough sun over there anyway, probably so. And the gardens look great. Are you growing any food there, or is it just mostly ornamentals?
Oh, tomatoes and all our lettuce.
That's
great. How I relax.
That is great. That is great. I mentioned earlier, I just went gluten-free and sugar-free myself, and folks, give it a try.
How many days, Joe?
Well, it's only been 10 days.
Good for you.
I tell you, you feel so...
You'll start dropping some weight.
Yeah.
Not that you really need to.
I do need to.
You do? Okay.
But anyway, I should mention David's website, too, and it's DF Dickens, right?
DFDickens.com.
Yeah, it's got a lot of cool stuff.
There's a lot of pictures of all my projects.
Yeah. There's a lot of oil rigs in the Gulf. A lot of people don't realize. How many, don't say it, David. Richard, how many rigs do you think are in the Gulf?
I have no idea, Joe.
Do you have any?
I don't actually know the number.
It's 48.
Many hundreds.
I think it's like 4,800.
4,800, okay. I said 4,800. I'm just kidding.
It's in the thousands.
It
would blow your mind.
Wow.
I could look that up for sure, but I know it's a number that will just boggle your mind. Heather, any new projects coming up that you'd like to talk about?
An interesting one that we're actually just purchased and we're going to be renovating for ourselves was one of the first modular houses ever thought of in San Diego, and that's a 1957 Russell Forester. Now, this is in the Ellentown Road part of La Jolla, where it's up by... UCSD Scripps Estates, and originally they had eight properties. They were going to do them all modularly in 1957 on 4-foot bays, and the builder talked them out of it as just being too newfangled. So it's kind of interesting to go full cycle now and renovate one of the original modular intended houses.
And what did modular look like 57 years ago? I mean, were the materials drastically different than what you see now?
They're all the same. The thing is, none of the materials are different. It's just that they put them together in a factory first before they, you know, put them onto the property.
And, of course, they didn't look as cool as this home, right?
they looked pretty cool for then.
Did they?
Yeah, they were still the mid-century modern with the big beam running down and the glazing in the eaves.
But what was the roof like? Was it more boxy looking?
Well, very low slope, and it was basically no insulation everywhere, just gravel on top of 2x6 TNG soffits inside.
Yeah, I grew up in a town called Sunnyvale back in the 60s, and we used to have these things called Eichler homes.
Exactly.
And
like
it was
that.
Really interesting because I lived in a standard home, but a lot of the kids I went to school with, when I'd go play with them, they lived in Eichler homes, and they were a lot more open, for example, than what we were used to.
Exactly.
They
like
didn't
that.
Run the air conditioning the same way we would, or because there was more ventilation and so on. But
yeah,
it was
those principles.
Very popular style up in the Bay Area.
Yeah, and it's a very sustained idea. And it's when people talk about the California style, that's exactly what they mean.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I saw on your web, there's that Asian lady, Sue Mayu.
Yeah.
You did her
Saffron
home?
Saffron Restaurant.
Yes.
We purchased her home that public architects had did some work on, and then I added onto it, and it was quite an honor.
Oh, you purchased her home, and then you moved in?
And we moved in, and then we completely renovated it, because she had big old barbecues that she would use out back, so we had to, you know, do a little rearranging.
Well, kudos to her. I mean, her show is running on another TV station, but I'm going to play Save Her San Diego. It's a wonderful show. I don't know if you've seen it. But,
oh, yeah. She's really great.
You know, it's great. I love the sustainability with homes, with food, with everything. So, but anyway, Richard, any closing questions or thoughts?
David, how was the process for you while the home was being built, since you collaborated somewhat?
Honestly.
Well, honestly.
Yeah.
There's a lot of stress involved. there's a lot of decisions to make. You also have to look at the cash flow. You know, there's money flying in, money flying out, and I tend to handle a lot of that. And there's a lot of decisions about finishes and colors and so on that, you know, that Heather, you know, we like to try to share opinions on it. And we actually agree in almost, I'd say, 99% of the cases in terms of our taste in things, you know, a style or a color. Or a look, you know, that Heather will suggest.
David, thanks for bringing your better half in.
Did you come in on budget, by the way, David, on the homework?
We came in within, I'd say, 4 or 5%.
Wonderful. Yeah. Folks, get over to Heather's website, hjarchitect.com, and check it out. The home is on the market. I'm sure you can take a look. And thank you to Joe Sorsch for being our guest in the first half. Richard, thank you.
And I want to say, Joe brought in his dad, Joe Sorsch, Sr., who's been one of my clients for almost 25 years.
All right, so shout out to him. David Dickens, thank you for being with us. Justin Hart, our sound engineer, thanks for making us sound great. And thanks to Craig Blanke, our con executive, and also to Dave Sniff, our programming genius here at KFMB. And don't forget the Stars and Stripe Ball for USO on May 4th. Check that out. You have a great week, everybody. We'll see you next week on It's Your Money and Your Life. Good night.